Welcome to the award-winning Doing Customer Experience Right podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Sherman, a professional global speaker and CX expert. This show is about action over theory, focusing on applying proven strategies to deepen customer relationships and increase loyalty as your competitive advantage. Besides achieving better human and business outcomes, each episode aims to elevate your professional and personal growth too. To continue learning, please subscribe to my newsletter at doingcxright.com. Today, I'm so excited to bring you Andy Milinski, a author and professor at Brandeis University who specializes in cultural intelligence and its impact on business. In this episode, you'll hear how cultural differences can influence business operations and the pivotal role of understanding these differences in providing exceptional customer experiences. We will discuss strategies for enhancing communications across diverse groups and review the difference and synergy between cultural intelligence and emotional intelligence, otherwise known as EQ. Additionally, we share strategies to build meaningful connections with customers from varied backgrounds, ensuring communication tools such as surveys are effective to get meaningful feedback with sensitivity to cultural nuances. By the end of the show, you'll know not only how to improve customer experiences, but also strengthen business relationships in ways you likely never thought of. Now, let's get started. Hello, Andy Milinski. Welcome to the Doing CX Right show.
Thanks for inviting me, Stacey. Happy to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, and it's going to be a really good dialogue. But before we get to the heart of it, please share with our audience, who are you? What do you do for a living?
I am a professor of organizational behavior. So I'm basically an organizational psychologist at Brandeis University in Boston. I also write books, and I've written three books. The first book was Global Dexterity, which is about stepping outside your cultural comfort zone, adapting behavior across cultures. My second book was Reach, which is about stepping outside your comfort zone in general. And then my most recent book, which came out this year, is about building relationships across cultures. So that's who I am.
Yes. Well, a lot to dive into and unpack. But before we do, I like to ask two things, a fun fact about you that people might not know.
Fun fact about me. I'm a huge Boston sports fan, all sports. And I spend a lot of time watching sports with my son.
I can appreciate that, especially being a parent of kids who played sports, but not in Boston. And another fact about you that I ask all my guests, which is about your younger self. Based on what you know now that you didn't know then, what would you tell younger 20-year-old Andy?
I think I would tell 20-year-old Andy to take more chances, to step outside his comfort zone. I mean, I wrote a book about it much later in life, but I kind of wish I could have had that advice early on, you know, to experiment a bit more. I'm happy with how I ended up, but I think it could have been interesting to a real learning opportunity when I was younger.
I relate to that very much. So this is the Doing CX Right show, and therefore, let's start with that question. When I say doing customer experience right, from all the experiences you've had and the interactions, both as a professor with students who are almost a customer, for businesses that you've been involved in, what does customer experience right mean to you?
I think it's, well, I mean, in terms of there could be a lot of different types of customers, but we're talking about sort of like interpersonal types of situations. And so I think building rapport is really important in a lot of contexts. And so that's what I would say, doing it right is building a strong sense of rapport quickly, a quick sense of rapport, maybe even trust. And, you know, in my work, I know that that can differ across cultures. And also there can be a lot of misperceptions across cultures. So that's what I would say.
So you bring up trust and cultures. that's not so easy to gain trust, whether the culture is of your internal staff or the different culture is your customer. So you talked about quickly. How do you do that when it's so diverse and relationships are not that quick?
Right. So we're not building I think it would be naive to say that you can build a deep sense of trust or a deep relationship quickly. That's not going to happen. But you can build a quick sense of rapport. There's mm-hmm. research that was done by actually my PhD advisor at Harvard, Nalini Ambati, and it was featured in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, about the idea of thin slices, about how we make these very quick impressions about people that are very sticky. And so those first few moments, those first few minutes can be very important in terms of creating a sense of connection, a sense of rapport. I think you can do it with a lot of different types of people because you yourself have a lot of different interests. And you can try to connect with people based on the different interests that they have, perhaps in common. So discovering commonalities and similarities, I think, is really important. I think in the world that I operate in the cross-cultural world, people are obsessed with differences, cultural differences, which are important to know about. But I mean, the way that we create connections is through similarities. It's not by avoiding differences. And so that's I think, really important.
You talk about differences. And in my words, it's the beauty of diversity, and yet we all want common bond. So how do you actually build those relationships when it seems like the world is segregated? And for people who are interested to build that deeper relationship, especially in business, well, in all facets of life, but for in business, what is your advice to people and leaders? How do you really build that alignment with different cultures? Are there any particular tactics?
Well, I think the first thing is to not, it's hard, but because as human beings, we're natural classifiers, but to try not to classify people and to actually see people as humans. And they're an individual person. They might come from this culture or that culture. They might come from this department or that department, but they're a human being. And they have, worries and hopes and dreams and interests and passions and all sorts of things, just like you do. And I think that when you can connect with someone on some sort of human level, I think that's really important. And that sort of transcends culture or differences. When you're trying to build an initial connection with someone, you're looking for some place of commonality. You might have to probe around in the conversation, but ultimately you might hit on something. So for example, earlier you mentioned that you have kids who like sports. So if we were to have a conversation, I could imagine it going in that direction because I do too, right? So, and who knows where it would go from there. So I think that that's the kind of thing that you're looking out for.
Well, I think it's definitely essential when it comes to networking and people in sales roles. I mean, you can't be successful without that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some cultural differences, though. That's, I think, important to note. So it's not that every single person from a given culture is going to be like what you might expect. But there are some cultural differences. So, for example, there's some cultures where small talk is not very common. Right. And there are some other cultures where it's extremely common. There's some cultures where small talk might be acceptable, but that you maybe wouldn't get so personal. And then there are other cultures that get super personal. And if you're not really asking personal questions, and if you're not getting to know someone fairly quickly, they're wondering what's wrong. So, so that's at the cultural level. But of course, individual people, we're not all characteristic of the culture we come from, but that it might be a guess you might have going into it. Situation.
So you're making me think about the fact this is a lot around communication you just mentioned. Yeah. So when we design surveys or, customer service reps are talking to people on the phone or chatting, that sensitivity to culture is essential. Do you agree?
Absolutely. So for example, you might hear someone with a less than enthusiastic tone, let's say. And so you might draw a conclusion that they're not interested because of that tone. that the meta message that you take from that is, oh, they're not interested. Mm. But the reality might be is that they might be perceiving the situation totally differently. And for them, it's absolutely normal to be to use that type of tone. And in fact, that shows that they're taking this seriously and they are quite interested. So that's an example, just a small little example, you know, of cultural differences or differences in style. It doesn't have to be culture, by the way, but differences in style that can cause misperception that can result in a sort of, you know, a missed opportunity.
A quick funny story about this. I used to work at a global company, and here I am in the United States, and we were meeting, and I was talking about this premium service that we'll offer our customers. And I said, white glove service. And some of the folks on the call remotely overseas were so confused by me with this white glove. And their interpretation was, wait, you don't want to get your hands dirty? You don't want to, like, they had no clue. And I took for granted, like, white glove is actually the opposite. You go up and beyond.
And right.
So it's really does show culture, language. My God, there's so much room for mistakes and lack of relationships.
That's why I often paraphrase. I often either paraphrase something or give synonyms for something. You know, like in that case, for instance, white glove, for example, very careful, personalized treatment. So I might give a synonym so that they could that it can be clarified in the context of the conversation. I do that a lot with teaching because I teach in an MBA program and we have a lot of students from different countries, and I find myself constantly either paraphrasing or using multiple synonyms for the same thing so that if they don't catch the first one, they'll catch the second one, or the third one might clarify the first one, and so on.
Yeah. Do you train for that? I mean, how does a company who's trying to create a culture of embracing differences, what's your advice to them given the knowledge and the proof you're saying how important it is?
I mean, I think making it part of the culture is really important. So, in other words, rewarding people on it, assessing people on it, coaching and training people on it, making it something that's not just a throwaway, but actually something that's core to the mission, to the values, and that's sort of like baked into the system. I think is really if it's important. I think it's that's the way to do it.
Well, it sounds like it has to be important, even by the examples we're talking about, how there's such room for misinterpretation, and therefore you will lose your customers and you will lose your staff if you don't do it right.
It's a shame because it might have been because of misperceptions and miscommunication, and it could have been avoided if people were a bit more sensitive and knowledgeable and also didn't jump to conclusions, took a beat and tried to assess the situation.
So who's doing it right? Do you see any companies that are really embracing these cross-cultural differences? Anything in the research you've done who's truly an example that people could understand what this looks like?
I haven't done research at the, like, comparing companies in terms of their ability to do this, but I think that in my experience, it's not at the company level. It's usually at the individual person level, I think. Like, I don't think you'd find it, maybe you'd find it at the company level, but you see it at the individual person level. So for example, someone who's more cosmopolitan, someone who's had more exposure to different cultures, someone who can be a culture broker, who can understand both perspectives and maybe broker, not a deal, but broker communication. I think that that's a critical skill. And I don't know if that lives at the level of a company. It certainly lives at the level of a person. It's something that can be trained and taught and assessed and so on.
Yeah. You know, you're bringing out to me an important point, which is, as we know, a company's just a company. It's like not just like a building and real estate. It's just about people. People make a company. So what we're talking about really are the individuals, yes, but the individuals make the company. So in essence, we're saying the exact same thing because a company is just truly the people that make it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That you're not going to get an argument from me.
So are there metrics, like how can anybody know that they're doing this relationship and with culture at the basis and that sensitivity and that knowledge and the psychology that you know is behind it? How do you know you're doing it right? Is there such a metric for it?
I think it, I mean, there's no generic metric, but I think that you can assess it in individual in given situations. I mean, you could, well, that said, there are ways that you can assess someone's cultural intelligence in a sense, but it's mm-hmm. fairly broad. I think that the smartest thing for companies to do is to sort of look very local and say, who are our customers? What are the cultures? What are the, you know, circumstances when, you know, what are the potential challenges in this particular situation? How can we teach and train people to be aware of those challenges and overcome them? And then how can we assess them in this very local setting? I don't think it's generic, really.
Mm-hmm. I love that term, culture intelligence. So we know emotional intelligence, right? EQ, do they intertwine?
I think they do intertwine to some degree. Cultural intelligence is about, you know, your awareness of differences, your ability to spot them, your motivation to learn, your motivation to overcome, your ability to adapt and adjust your behavior, these types of things mm-hmm. across cultures. And then emotional intelligence, I think, intersects to the extent that sometimes intercultural situations can be full of emotion. You know, it could be that you feel inauthentic, you might feel incompetent, you might feel anxious, you might feel embarrassed, you might feel ashamed, you might feel frustrated, resentful. Those are all emotions, right? And so that's where emotional intelligence intersects, I think, with cultural intelligence, cultural awareness.
Mm. So where does diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, which has a lot of debate lately, I almost feel like we need a new word for it. Because in essence, everybody wants that transparency and belonging, but for some reason, DEI is not getting a good rap, and I'm not sure why. But the question is, where does that come in to culture intelligence?
Well, I think, I mean, it depends on, as you said, it depends on how you understand DEI, right? I think DEI has become something where you ask 10 people what it is and you get 10 different answers, right?
Yeah.
And so it's possible that if you ask, well, certainly if you ask me, myself, I think that part of diversity, equity, and inclusion has to do with your ability to function successfully across cultures, right? I mean, I think that that's part of it. So I think it would, for me, it fits right in. Right in the territories. But I think for, you know, maybe other people see it differently. And so, yeah, that's what I would say. I think it really depends on how you see DEI, frankly.
Do you see DEI as I'm observing where I go and travel, even at events? Do you see a trend with DEI that is changing and shifting as a priority? Do you see it less or do you see it more from where you know, your perspective?
From my perspective, I think it's as needed as it's ever been. But I think it has become a bit of a political lightning rod in the country, this idea of DEI.
Political lightning rod. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's as needed as ever. So I have heard that companies are cutting. Companies were doing a lot of spending in DEI and now they're cutting a lot of spending. There's a bit of a bandwagon effect, I think, with companies. You know, when they feel like to be legitimate, they need to hire someone in DEI, but then for some reason it seems to fall out of favor and then it's really a shame. I think at its essence it's such an important thing if you think about it. Equity and inclusion and diversity. I mean, that's what we have here in this country, in the organizations that we're a part of. It's very important. But yeah, I think this is a sort of ongoing story. It's not a finished story.
I love your take on it. And I do believe that if there was the shift in terminology, And it was more towards the culture intelligence and embracing culture for belonging and get to what it really is, as opposed to this acronym that gives people just a different, it's become political. I think you said it right. So I think that it's time for the shift of wording. Because even what you've said about, even from a psychological standpoint, whether it's students or whether it's people in companies or in your families, like, people just want to belong. And when they belong and they are accepted, they do more, they give more. And I think that's where we have to get back to.
Absolutely. I think one of the core needs that individuals have, according to psychological research, is a sense of belonging. I think it's very, very important.
Yeah. And there's definitely business results from it, because again, we pay it forward when we feel like we belong. So for those who are wondering, what's the correlation here? It's very obvious.
Oh yeah. I think people give that extra discretionary effort. Yes. They cut people slack. They feel more commitment. You know, I think there are a variety of very important outcomes that come from making people feel that they really belong. It's the challenge, I think, is that it's vague for some people, and also it's not so easy to do. You know, it requires some real skill.
What do you do when there's a crisis in the company? So, like today, there's a lot of thousands of people. I think it's AT&T, and I don't know if there's more, but there's literally everybody's down, lost service, businesses, personal. And so there's a company, real crisis going on for people who are dependent on service. And it makes me think about, I used to work for the company years ago, so I'm not there and the culture has changed, but there's got to be something around that culture intelligence and that, how you handle that internally when chaos happens. Any perspective from that?
So this is not my area exactly, but you know, my sense is that it's very important to prepare for crisis situations. Yeah. So you're increasing the odds that it's not chaos, actually, so that you have a plan in place, right? I think when it's chaos, I think that's when emotions are probably going to drive decisions, and you're probably going to make suboptimal decisions, and there's going to be a lot of conflict, a lot of disagreement, a lot of uncertainty. And I think that planning for these types of situations is critical. Of course, you can't plan for every uncertain situation, but having contingency plans, I think, in place is really important. And I think that's why there is a whole field of crisis management. And I think that, you know, it's not my area, but I think that that's part of the reason that that field exists.
I also see the interconnection of crisis management, communication, and then communication within the right cultural definition or meaning. So they're separate entities, but yet that knowledge, how to communicate to differences and diversity so that it can get to calmness.
Exactly. I think that is important. And organizations today aren't just everyone in the building. Organizations today are people who are virtual, they're distributed geographically, across the country, across time zones, across countries, and so on. So, you know, having a unified message in an organization, I think, has the level of difficulty has increased.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you seeing from students, right, rising into the work world and the diversity you're seeing? Is it a different mindset, this next generation, than the prior one that we were in?
I think it depends on where you are. You know, I think location matters a lot. I think there are parts of this country, the US, that are quite homogeneous. And then there are parts of this country that are incredibly diverse. So where I am, at the school that I am at, we are very, very diverse, our business school. We have 60 or 70% international students. We have a ton of international students. Like, for example, in my MBA classroom, I think this semester I must have had one American. I mean, so it's truly diverse. And so students coming from that context are probably much more comfortable and, you know, sort of used to working with people who are very different from them, with different backgrounds than we were, probably. But I think it really depends on the context that you were raised in, right? I think it really depends on where you were raised and what your background was. It's hard to generalize.
Well, I think that that's the magic word, because a lot of companies, they do generalize, right? And people have a habit of generalizing. And I think that's the lesson, is to appreciate the uniqueness. And those are the businesses and universities that will thrive by appreciating that. And again, the cultural intelligence and culture, it's a funny word to say, but love, right? Love for the differences.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So coming to the end here, and I want people to understand that, what does this have to do with doing CX right? And it has so much to do with it, right? Because the customers you have, the prospects you have, it all builds trust. It all builds that loyalty, that alliance. And so you talk so much about building relationships and the cultural differences being an asset. That's the bottom line. But I don't want to steal the words out of your mouth. What do you want people listening to take away? What's the most important?
Well, in terms of CX, and in terms of these relationships, I think that at the end of the day, you want to be seen as respectful, relatable, and reliable. Respectful, relatable, and reliable. And I think culture and cultural perceptions and cultural differences can influence all of those. And so I think, you know, if you're seen as respectful, relatable, and reliable, you're going to give great customer interaction. You have great customer interactions, and you're going to create loyal relationships with your customers. But you need to be aware of culture and develop that sense of cultural intelligence we were talking about. So that's I guess what I would hope people could take away.
Yes. And we know that cultures, at least in companies, are led by really good leaders. Yeah. So leadership, what is the best leadership advice that you've received or that you've given that stands out in your mind?
I think it's get to know and care about your people. I mean, I think that that's really learning to empathize is something that, it seems very basic, but a lot of leaders don't do that. And I think that those relationships, especially with your key people, that's gold. That's gonna make you be able to achieve your goals. But don't overlook that human side.
Yeah. Oh yes. Well, 1 minute on that human side. Where does this emerging technology and AI come into play when you're talking about cultural intelligence? Is the world thinking about it, oh, I've got to create a diverse bot, and therefore that's the way they do it? Like, where do you see this going?
Well, I think AI at this point is like, at least for the consumers, is like Google on steroids. You know, it's like a Google search on steroids. So it's actually quite helpful to if you're curious about, you have a question about cultural differences, to use, you know, ChatGPT or whatever you're using to try to get information. The only problem with that is that I've used it quite a bit, and I find that, like, I don't know, some small percentage of the information is wrong or completely made up. So, you know, the validity of it is a little questionable, a little wonky. But I do think that it's a great tool, not to use by itself, but alongside other tools to learn. I think it's actually a very interesting, useful learning tool in terms of bots. You know, I don't know. It's not my area, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, and to think about how do you use it to not take away from the culture you're creating in a company, and how to use the technology to support and enhance what you're trying to achieve. And I think that that's a big question without a lot of answers yet.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. I've seen very friendly, informal, casual, helpful sort of AI bot types in various, you know, online businesses that I've interacted with and played around with. So you can, I mean, I know, I see it existing. So it would be very interesting to see what happens in the future.
Well, even trying to personalize, you can now change your Siri or your car maps voice to be a different accent, a male, a female. I mean, I think that they're bringing diversity into the automation in fascinating ways. So,
well, and one thing that brings us together, maybe yeah. We come from different cultures, speak different languages, have different backgrounds, but we're all curious about where AI is going. And so that is an example of a similarity that we might have a passion, even though we're from very different places, to try to understand where it's going. So that's an example of how AI can, you know, bring people together, so to speak.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's a fascinating topic, and I don't hear people talking enough about culture intelligence as a way to strengthen relationships in and out of the organization. So thank you for sharing your wisdom, and people will be able to find you and link to you in the show notes, and appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining today. I hope you will apply the lessons shared, and also requesting if you would leave a review on Apple would mean a lot. Head over to doingcxright.com to learn more ways to connect with me and improve your CX. Until next time, I'm Stacey Sherman, Doing CX Right.